ならばが見つけた鳴らすなあの
We're recording this?
We are recording this, yes. This is the beginning of the podcast. I'm guessing you're drinking this beer.
Yeah.
It's fucking cheat day.
Yes. I have been I've been following my diet to the letter, really. And it's been working.
That's awesome.
And cheat day is cheat day, and I can cheat.
Take as much as you want.
Well, okay, have some. Come on.
No, it's your cheat day.
But I don't want to not
it's
give
you... your cheat day. This show is amazing. I'll drink Sam Adams. I'll drink LaMerrill. I'll drink Hoppin' Frog.
All right.
You do what you want, and I'll take whatever's left over.
All right, if you insist. Ooh, look at that. That's a lot. All right,
so I am going to take the last of the beer to Mars, which is fucking asshole. Just let me cut the props.
No, after saying, take what you want.
No, that's fine. You paid for it. It's your cheat day. It's your beer.
I was telling Jeff, we didn't talk about this, but cheat day's hard. Because you think I want to get a burger.
Get the shit out of this.
I'm going to get a burger. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to have like lots of, I'm going to have some soda. I'm going to have all this stuff. And like, I was out shopping for some stuff. Mostly like, I get a lot of like unsweetened iced tea. That's something I drink a lot on this. Because you're supposed to drink a lot of water, and unsweetened iced tea is just as good. As long as unsweetened.
Mm-hmm.
And
you probably make your own unsweetened iced tea for like a fraction of the cost.
It's hard. Maybe this stuff is good and it works, and so I can afford it. So I'm not gonna. But anyway,
is coffee allowed on your?
No.
What's wrong with the coffee?
Caffeine.
Oh, caffeine's not
good. Yeah. So it's not that good. I mean, there's that. It's allowed, but only like one cup, and you can't use cream, or you have to use like whole cream, but not milk.
Well, you just get good beans, and you can drink it black. I mean,
yeah, and use cinnamon. There's all these things, but I just don't drink it because I have more energy on this anyway, mm-hmm. on this diet. So, but anyway, I was like, I'm gonna get a big burger. I'm gonna do that. And I was out, so I was like, all right, well, there's a Five Guys here. It's not the best burger in the world, but it's better than McDonald's. I just want to get a burger. So I got this, you know, big burger and French fries. Like, yeah, I'm gonna eat this thing. I got through half the burger. That's it.
That's all I could eat. You could get another quarter down.
It's in the fridge. I don't know what I'm going to do with it. It's in the fridge. I was also like, you know, I'm probably going to be hungry later too. So I was there at this Giant Market District, Giant Eagle. So I'm going to get some mashed potatoes here. Because, man, I haven't had mashed potatoes in a while. I could eat like one or two spoonfuls of mashed potatoes, and that was it. This diet.
You bought it from like the cafe?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I mean, I put what was left in the freezer now. Why not? Right, I'll have it next cheat day. I can't eat as much. I just can't.
That's the start, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're reducing. You're not only doing the body hack, you're also you're reducing your caloric intake, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so you know, even if you could, you know, even on cheat days, you're a lot closer to 2,000 calories than you would have been otherwise.
Yes.
You know?
So. Although I'm drinking, I mean, obviously, one of the really important points of the diet, and I've learned more about the diet as, you know, as the days have gone on and as I've read more, is the whole point is to really cut down on sugar almost completely. Get rid of sugar from your diet whatsoever. And so and not just sugar, but also sugar substitutes. So, sucralose, things like that.
There's theories about how that trains your body to crave the sweetness, right? I mean, I listened to the Alton Brown Nerdist he mentioned a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about that, about how you know, his nemesis, other than milk, which I think that's kind of just I find his milk nemesis more of a showbiz, you know, funny story thing, because he can use the, hey, let's go get some Girl Scout cookies.
Well, and I don't know. I think he grew up probably drinking a lot of milk. If you grow up drinking milk,
then... But he says he uses almond milk. And to me, did you try the almond milk that you bought?
Yes.
To me...
I'm not supposed to drink it, though, I found out.
I can't imagine how real milk would cause you to have cravings that almond milk would not. I mean, to me, it's perfectly
lactose.
I guess, maybe, but he was talking about how Diet Coke was really his real nemesis, right? Where it was, because it's not many calories, but it did, I forget how he worded it, but it had something along the lines of these false sugars, no calorie false sugars are not good for you either, yeah, because they train your body to want sweet stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
they spike what they do is they spike your insulin, and that makes you want, it makes you hungry, it makes you desire more. So yeah, what you're trying to do is you're trying to regulate your insulin levels with this, essentially. And a secondary thing it's doing is you're basically cutting out all what you use for, you know, ATP synthesis uses glucose, right? So in order to do energy, you need glucose. So you get glucose. There are lots of ways to get glucose. And first of all, just taking glucose in, just eating things with sugar. Fructose can be very easily converted into glucose from your glucose from your liver. Starches are simply long chains of glucose, especially easy ones like amylose and amyl pectin. So things like, so grains like the rice that have amylose and amyl pectin, that's it, are awful, very bad to have.
Great Divide hosts their website on the same web host we use, Bluehost.
Huh, how about that?
And they don't have a fave icon set up. Slackers. Sorry, go ahead.
Anyway, so what you're doing with this diet is you're cutting out sugars completely, you're cutting out easy starches, and you're going with what's called slow carbs, these beans, lentils, these sort of things that take your body a while to digest, and it needs energy to digest it. And in order to get that energy, and it doesn't have glucose, it goes to fat. It goes to fat to get and converts that to glucose to get your energy to digest. So that's what's going on. That's the basis behind the, you know, the chemistry of the diet. And so what you do is you eat, you know, some protein, some fat, and a lot of these beans in your meals. And some vegetables and roughage, stuff like that, and you fill up pretty quickly on this, especially if you eat it relatively slow, if you take your time eating it,
so the
deal is not three but four meals a day, or three if that's, you know, I can only manage three actually, but it's a breakfast, and then a midday lunch and an end day lunch and a dinner, is sort of the idea. He says like 10 to 6, 10.
Okay.
But he says he sleeps late and wakes up late. So that's his thing. This guy Tim Ferriss. You can read the book 4-Hour Body. It's a crazy book, but the diet works. So what are you gonna do? So I move it back a couple hours, and for breakfast it's mostly like eggs. It's one or two hard boiled eggs, and then just the whites from the hard boiled eggs. And that's it. And then 4 hours later, there's a giant eagle about 5 or 6 miles away from me. So I go there and get a quick salad with just basically lettuce, some veggies like onions, and one or two little chicken things and pickles, and pour some of the pickled juice over it for dressing as opposed to any other dressing.
That's an interesting way to go about it.
It works.
Especially like... You know, like I could see maybe not pickle juice, but pepper juice would be a good, you know,
thing. That would work too. But yeah, there's no, I mean, oil and vinegar would work fine, but they don't have oil and vinegar. It's not a great diet, giant eagle.
Mm-hmm.
So they have this balsamic that's, I'm sure, has sugar and other stuff in it. So I just use the pickle juice and that works fine.
Mm-hmm.
Then for dinner, it's usually like I make these fish stews that have beans in them. And so a little bit of protein and lots of beans, and I use the fish stock to give it a lot of, you know, heft and stuff like that. And tomatoes are okay, mm-hmm. So tomatoes and that. And then for dessert, if I'm hungry at all, a little bit more of the fish stock and or dinner, a little more fish stock. And another thing that he says is try to get fermented foods like either pickles or sauerkraut or kimchi. instead of left of sauerkraut.
So, but pickles aren't, I mean, any pickle you buy at the store is not a fermented pickle, right?
It's just right, but it's, pickle. It's, it, I mean, it's not bad for you.
Sure.
But the sauerkraut's probably better for you. The reason why is because the bacteria in there is good for your stomach.
Mm-hmm.
And that plus the...
Is yogurt on your okay list? No. Not even like Greek yogurt or like...
No.
Okay.
And I've learned a lot about, you know, what to avoid. Like, I thought I was, it was okay to eat nuts. And no, that's not good. Because they're what he calls a domino food. You start eating and you keep eating and eating and eating and eating. It's not good to snack on this diet. You do your meals and that's it. You don't snack. Okay. If you need some food, eat some sauerkraut. You know, do that.
That's interesting. You know, almonds was a big part of my diet.
Yeah.
I would have a half serving. Was it an ounce? Half ounce, I guess. I would take an ounce of almonds to work. And I would eat half of them, which is only about 8-10 almonds, between breakfast and lunch. And I would save the other half between, you know, after lunch. And, you know, the snack that, you know, really kept me from being too hungry. You know, part of Alton talked about using almonds. And so that's how I worked that in, you know, half a serving, just a little filler, a little snack. And, you know, almonds have other benefits as well. So,
I mean, they're nice, but they don't work on this diet.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is,
well, you know, talk about domino food. I think if you...
Garbanzos was.
I don't want to talk
again. Okay, but that's a domino.
Oh, okay.
So the beans I'm eating are not garbanzos, but like red beans and black.
So domino is like, you know, like a Ruffles. You bet you can't eat just one type thing. Or?
Basically, yeah. It's like if you start eating, it becomes really easy to eat more than you should.
Okay. So I mean, what if you have the discipline to, you know, weigh out a portion and just pack the portion separately?
If you have the discipline in it and you can stop yourself, then it should be okay.
I mean, anything that comes in a bag, you know, is bad for a diet, right?
Yeah.
Because you can't stop yourself.
Right.
But if you can take that bag and portion it out and only take one serving to work with you, right?
But then you'll be fine. Yeah. I mean, you know, and there are people who've done this diet. Like Tim actually does a diet where he actually drinks a bottle or two glasses of red wine at night. He says white wine's bad, beer's bad, but red wine has less sugars in it, and it's and he says you can do it. And I'm not drinking any alcohol at all for any of the days.
There's calories in alcohol, right?
So many calories.
Exactly.
And alcohol turns into acetate, which your liver can use for energy instead of your fat. So it stops the fat burning completely while it's using that for energy. So alcohol is bad for fat burning.
Yeah, it's easy energy, and your body will use that instead of losing weight.
Mm-hmm. And the whole point of the cheat day is to stop your body from going into starvation mode. Stop your body from like thinking, okay, I'm never going to get this stuff anymore. So I'm going to stop what I'm doing and change my metabolism.
So you said you have more energy.
Yeah.
I mean, so you feel. I mean, obviously,
you're pretty motivated. I have more energy.
How much? But how would you characterize how you're feeling? How much better are you?
Well,
feeling?
There's another component to this, which is first of all, I've also started to use the nutritional supplements he recommends. I talked about those in the pre-show. Mm-hmm. But this other thing is, I've changed my ADD medication. I changed it from Adderall to a new one called Vyvanse. And the reason why is because Adderall was giving me this kind of like jumpy feeling. It was too far. And this Vyvanse is just, you take it in the morning and that's it. You take it once and you feel good and not jumpy for the rest of the day. And it's been working really well, and I take that in the morning. And maybe that's been contributing to it. But I mean, it's already 11 and I took it 12 hours ago. So it's probably worn off by now, and I still feel pretty high energy. I'm taking a B complex that includes B12 in the morning. That is something to do with it, but I just feel more energy, and I'm really not doing a heck of a lot of exercise at all. I'm still losing weight.
And that was the next question. It was about exercise. I mean, you know, you're still a big guy. You know, you don't want to go in too hard, but like, you know, what about twice a week, three times a week, you know, going to the local mall.
I was,
and just doing a half mile.
I've been highly considering that. And in fact, I'm looking at various gyms around me to see what's good.
Cheaper than a gym. I don't know how far you are from any indoor mall. Just go 2 or 3 times a week and walk around the mall twice.
But I can just walk around where I work twice. And
well, it's going to be wintertime soon.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, you know, gyms are a monthly thing. Treadmills can be boring. If you take your iPad, your iPod, you know, your iPhone and get some media, then it, you know, that's what I do. That's how I can pass an hour on the treadmill or elliptical really easily, is I load up a show and watch the show. And that, you know, it's like the rule is I'm not getting off this until the show's over, right? I mean, that works. That's a pretty good way to enforce yourself to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, like, but, you know, something super low impact would be walking around.
I mean, part of this diet is actually do not overexercise. Overexercising can actually hurt this diet and cause you to not do well. So,
but you know, if you go to an indoor mall, walk around the mall twice, you're only going to burn 400 calories. But that's 400 calories off your diet.
Yeah,
and that adds up every day. So, or not every day. So 1,200 calories a week.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not a strenuous thing at all.
4-hour body. I think that the 4-hour is the amount of exercise you do a week.
Okay.
So I mean, so you're not doing 3 hours at the gym every day. Absolutely.
But if you could work in just a little bit of walking, you know, to start, and then work up from there. But a little bit of walking to start, I think it would definitely make a bigger dent, you know, a noticeable dent.
I'm starting slow and building up.
No, absolutely. And like I said, that's why I mentioned, you know, 2 laps around the mall.
Yeah. But, you know, in terms of is it working, my pants, instead of being at my thing, are up to my waist now, and I'm almost at my last... I can get it to my last thing on the belt. It's just slightly uncomfortable, just a bit, so a little more. But
what's your goal? I mean, well, like, what do you consider your? I don't know. I mean, is it going to be a?
I'm not going to be a beanpole. I'm not going to have six pack abs, but I'd like to lose about 100 pounds, I think.
Okay. We haven't talked about goals, so I was just curious, like, where you saw the, you know, because like with mine, I was hardcore for 50 pounds,
right?
You know, and you know, and then I kind of just I'm in maintenance mode right now.
Yeah.
And I was just curious, you know, so you're going to be like your goal is fairly hardcore for 100 pounds, and then see where it goes from there.
Yes. Right.
And then I also found, you know, my body likes 196 pounds, where I really wanted to get down to 185. So that last 11 pounds is like...
Yeah, there are, you know, tough points where your body is... There are different body types. There are certain body types that like being a certain way.
And I'm up right now. I actually want to lose... I'm at 205 right now. So I need to lose 10 pounds, 9 pounds.
You going this?
I'll stick with my method. Instead of going on a very... There's too many rules.
And the funny thing is there aren't too many rules. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are things you don't eat and things you eat. But there are no portion controls. There's nothing like that. It's just you eat this and that's it. Eat this until you're full.
You know, over the summer, I really slacked on the gym. So I think, you know, I'm reintroducing the gym back into my lifestyle. And that should get those 9 pounds off. And then... We'll see from there. When I get back down to 195 and 196, you know, because 196 is where my body was where I had a comfortable lifestyle and my body was happy at. I got as low as, I want to say I got as low as 190, but it was like tough. And I wanted, you know, my body just kept creeping up. So, you know, 194 is where my BMI makes me a healthy American. 196 is where my body wants to be. I thought, you know, if I get down to 185, then I got some breathing room. I'll be in great shape, relatively great shape, not Olympian shape, but great shape for a fat guy. And, but it would take some serious discipline to stay at 185.
Yeah. And you just, you know, you have a body that likes to be a little bit heavier, and that's fine. You don't need to be a GQ model.
No.
You can be perfectly healthy, a little bit overweight. It's not it's not going to hurt you. It really isn't. The problem is when you're morbidly obese, you know, when you're in that stage. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to get out of that and trying to get into the point where, I'm probably going to be a little overweight. It's just what my, way my body is, but I don't want to be into the obese area.
I commend you. I am happy that you're doing so. I mean, there was, you know, a year ago, like, you know, you didn't seem to have an interest in losing weight, you know, and I'm like, damn, like, what is Greg's life expectancy? I was wondering that, like, you know, because you were putting on weight,
yeah,
and I didn't know if that was going to stop or when that was going to stop. I'm like, is he gonna make it to 50? You know, like, I don't know.
I think the problem was that it was, you know, it was tough to find a diet that worked for me.
Mm-hmm.
And this one works. Because it was easy to start. And as I'm continuing it, it's easy to continue. And it shows its benefit right away. You know, that's part of what Tim Ferriss says in the book is that, you know, for diets are not fun. Mm-hmm. But the point of this diet is to work immediately to show you how well it will work if you keep on it. And then because of that, you'll keep on it. And then the other thing is that you get the cheat day once a week. So the worst thing you have is you crave something for 6 days. And usually you don't, because after your cheat day, you're not craving things for... Right.
And actually, like you just said, your cheat days are not destroying the whole previous week. Because you, even if you wanted to... If you wanted to, like, I'm just
eating. I'm drinking a lot of calories here. That's the thing.
But, like, you're like, I'm just going to eat bacon grease for 24 hours straight.
Right, yeah. Well, like, yeah, you cannot do that. I mean, especially 4 weeks in, I cannot. It's impossible. Mm-hmm. I mean, and part of the cheat day is go ahead, try.
I dare you.
Yeah, I dare you.
That's the trick, right? Because you read the whole bit about the cheat day going into it. I'm like, oh, yeah. And now it's like, they stole my cheat day away from me. I can't do what I wanted to do.
Well, I can still have beers, right? I can still, you know, have a treat or two. I just, I can't pig out.
I was teasing.
Yeah, but, no, I get what you're saying. But, I mean, the point is, you know, and I want to stress this, you know, the point is that, you know, it works.
But you didn't know going in that you wouldn't have the appetite to eat a Five Guys triple burger.
Right.
You know? And maybe if you knew that, you might have been like, I'm not sure how... I mean, before you saw any results,
right?
If you knew you wouldn't be able to finish a 3-patty burger or something like that...
It was a double patty, but yeah.
But, you know, you might have been like, I don't know if I want to go there, you know? But, you know, since you saw the results first, you're like, I don't care that I'm not hungry.
Yeah.
Actually, that's really cool that they made me not hungry, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It was just like, I can't eat this, and I don't mind that I can't eat this. It doesn't bug me. You know, it's, all right, I'll throw it away. You know, I think this is a diet for if you have discretionary income. That's something that needs to be said. Because you're buying a lot of beans, you're buying protein. When you could use meat, I'm buying mostly fish, and that's a little more expensive. I'm buying a lot of stock. That's expensive. Like I said, I'm buying tea. I guess I could brew it, but that would take time. So
yeah, you can make stock.
Yeah,
take a lot of time.
Yeah, I'm buying things. It's expensive to do this diet, but it's working, and I have the discretionary income to do it. And,
but I mean, if you know, you talk to an economist, right? You're spending a lot of money. You're spending more money on your food. But where are the places you're saving?
I mean, I'm not spending money on a nutritionist. I'm not spending money.
Well, I'm talking about where are the secondary places that you're saving money, right? You know,
I'm not buying beer.
You're not buying. Well, that's per the diet. I'm thinking more on the back end. You know, you're not buying new bigger clothes,
right?
Even though you will have to buy smaller clothes eventually,
right?
You know, but like you know, economist says you know a healthier America means like, you know, so you put it through Obamacare, you save money over here on healthcare.
I mean,
what's
true is that I'm not buying lunches, right? I'm not going out and buying, you know, $10, $15 lunches. I'm buying like a $4 salad. So that's a big deal because lunch can be expensive.
But also think about, you know, if you continued your old lifestyle, the medical bills, the doctor bills, the prescriptions, the checkups, you know,
yeah.
you know, there's all that cost you're not going to have, you know, once you become healthy, you know, health, nice, healthy weight. So there's that, that's the kind of thing, you know, when you listen to Freakonomics or something right, like yeah. that, you know, that's what the economists will point out.
So. Yeah. But you know, that's a long run problem. And as they say in economics, in the long run, we're all dead. So, you know, don't concentrate on the long run, think short run, think, you know, think at most like a year or so. Because
yeah, that's an interesting way to look at it.
Because the point is to be happy. The point is not to be to think about what it's going to be like 20 years from now. Because 20 years you're going to be a completely different person. Think about what it's going to be like at most a year from now. Because you're probably not going to change all that much in a year. But you're gonna like the same things. But in 20 years you're going to be a completely different person. You're going to like different things. You're going to like to do different things. So think about how you want to live now and in the immediate future, and not how I want to live 30 years from now. Because how I want to live 30 years from now is going to be not going to be just me, a different world, different person. It's going to be a completely different world 30 years from now. The things that are going to be going on. I mean, just think about what it was like 30 years from today.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fucking ridiculous how completely different it is. So, yeah, I'm, and I have the advantage, I don't have kids. I don't have that to think about. You know, I'm, as I said before, I have me, my broken brain. I can concentrate on me alone. That's what I'm going to work on.
I'm proud of you. I am.
You don't
have
to be proud
of me. No, I am. I am happy because, seriously, you know, a year ago, months ago, I have, you know, I'm like, you know, Greg shows no interest in, you know, health, you know, and he's getting bigger, and what the hell's gonna happen, you know? And so I'm very excited and happy, and I'm glad you're seeing results. I'm glad you're excited about your diet, and or I should say your lifestyle, because
it's a diet. It's a diet. It is a diet.
You know,
it's what
I mean,
it is.
I don't worship Alton Brown, even though it sounds like it at times. You know, but, you know, in Live or Let Diet, he says, you know, a diet is something people get on just to get off of, where, you know, his philosophy was to start a new lifestyle.
I don't buy that. Okay. I, you know, I think I can expand to, like, maybe eating pasta a couple times a week when I get to,
still,
you know,
a new lifestyle. I mean, because if you're going to stop the 4-hour body and go back to old Greg, the weight's just going to come back on.
Yes, that's true.
So it's a new lifestyle. It's still a... You know, so he says, don't call it a diet because you don't want to be on a diet for the rest of your life. Now, if you're a little more pragmatic, you're going to call you know, apple and apple, right? And it is a diet. It's a diet that you subscribe to for the rest of your life.
I'm not...
you're going to adjust it, and you're going to get to a maintenance mode once you get past the weight loss mode.
Right.
But you still have to pay attention. You can't just leave it and go back to your natural habits. You know, that's a problem. Yeah. That's probably the biggest problem. That's why I'm up 10 pounds, 11 pounds from where I should be, because I stopped measuring portion sizes.
Well,
I stopped cutting half of my... When we go out to eat, I stopped asking for a takeout box at the front and cutting my food in half.
Right.
You know? And I've actually gone back to that. But I fell back into some of my old habits of just eating till I felt full. And, you know, I almost need, you know, a pop-up alarm saying, hey, asshole, dumbass, look at what you're doing. And so I've gotten to the point where, you know, we go out to eat. When the food comes, can I have a takeout container? And I cut the food in half and only eat half of it. You know, you just got to stick with some of those things.
One of the big things is to eat slowly, because that signal that you're full takes time to get to your brain. It's a hormone that's released, and it takes time to cross the blood-brain mm-hmm. barrier or something along those lines. It takes like 20 minutes for your body, for your stomach to say, I'm full, to your brain. So if you just go, oh, you want to tell, and then all of a sudden you're stuffed.
Yeah, that's a big problem of mine. I didn't grow up in a huge family, but my family did train me to eat fast. So that's a big thing mm-hmm. I have to be conscious of, too, is to slow down, make sure I don't eat too much.
Anything else going on? It's 30 minutes on diets.
Fall TV starting up. I watched the pilot of Revolution. Do you watch that at all? You catch that?
Yeah, hold on a second.
Trying to find the pause button.
Before we talk about Revolution, I just want to say, they say cocaine gets you high. I've had cocaine. I've had lots of things that get you high. There's no high greater than when you have to pee and you finally do.
There's... Let me go on top of that.
All right.
When you are camping in the wintertime,
mm-hmm.
and you're in a sleeping bag and it's like 0 degrees out, you know, and you have to pee, but you don't want to leave the sleeping bag. But then you actually take the sacrifice to go out in the cold and piss and get back in your sleeping bag. That's the high.
Okay. If you say, I mean, that feeling I got was like, it's like the world opened up. It was great.
That's almost like when you take a shit, one of those very special shits where it makes you a whole new man.
Right, not a hot one, right? One where you feel like you've lost 10 pounds.
It's just, yeah, you're like,
oh my God. I feel like I just dropped a brick, but oh wow.
Oh, I feel like a new man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those are the shits.
Those are the shits and those are the peas. That feeling that you get when that thing is gone is like, oh yeah, yeah. I almost think that's part of what compels you to drink.
It's it's an interesting thought. You know, it's almost as sensual as like sex or having an orgasm. You know?
I think it's in the same league.
I mean, when you have one of those shits.
Uh huh.
It's as good as sex.
And it makes sense. It's the same nerves, right?
It is the same nerves. So it's kind of a coincidence thing, right? I mean, it's kind of accidental that our sex organs evolved as our evacuation organs.
Right.
You know?
Well, it's just, you know, the thing about evolution is it goes, you know, it goes for what's easy, not for what's the best. It's mm-hmm. just, will this work? Okay, good. Do it. That's what evolution goes for. Right. So, yeah.
Don't bother me with the details.
Yeah.
You know, the implementers are mediocre programmers, right? They're just hacking shit together. The executive function's like, does that work? Oh, yeah, it works. Okay, good enough.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
they're looking at the bottom line. They're looking at least energy expended.
Will this optimized thing work better? Probably, but that's optimized. Got to do all
more
this
energy?
Shit to do it.
Fuck
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Go with the easy one. Get the hack to program it.
That's at least, and it works. It works.
All right, so Revolution. I just caught the pilot. I downloaded it.
So this is the one where all electricity is gone.
Yeah, like, so the main character, who I guess dies in the first episode, I don't think he's coming back, he works for some shadowy government agency, you presume, who knows that the lights are going out, tells his wife to fill all the tubs, which, bullshit, because your local water pressure is powered by gravity, not by pumps. So you'd be able to fill your tubs after the power goes out. Because they're in water towers. Most people, power comes
most
from
most people, not
water
everybody.
Towers.
It most depends people. On where you are, right? If you're in a city, not necessarily.
Okay. Oh, maybe. But most people's water comes from water towers, I think. So that's bullshit. That's the biggest problem I have with the whole show.
No, there are water pumps. There's that. I mean, where I am is a pump. It's not a okay. water tower.
I guess you're right. I guess it could be. All right. I'll let that one slide. I'm just thinking about Cranberry, where it comes from towers. There's like three towers in a Cranberry. It feels all of them. All right, anyway. You know, definitely bad robot production. You can feel it, you know, pretty much throughout the show.
You know, I'll say this, bad robot-wise. Lost was one of the best pilots ever made. Lost was just, it grabbed you. Immediately, it was fantastic. And you look at other pilots. I've seen a couple other pilots. As you, not too many. I saw Elementary. I saw Last Resort, and they're okay. They're not Lost. Mm-hmm. Lost was so good.
So how was Revolution?
I didn't see Revolution.
Oh, you
but,
didn't see it yet. Okay.
But I'm not that interested in it, okay. And I don't think it's the same.
You know, I
did it grab you the same way as Lost?
It grabbed me like. I really, it's hard to take myself back to Lost. I told the story before. I don't know if you remember, but before the show Lost, there was a reality show called Lost.
Yes, on NBC.
The premise of the show was they would blindfold all the competitors, fly them to someplace on Earth, drop them off, and the first person to get back to the Statue of Liberty wins.
Right.
And I thought that there was one season. I thought it was a really cool premise. I mean, it sounds like an awesome premise, doesn't it? It's a very unscripted, do whatever the fuck it takes, right, get back to the Statue of Liberty to win reality show. So when I saw Lost was on, I tune into the first one. I thought it was season two of the reality show. And I see this guy, you know, Matthew Fox, lying in a jungle. I'm like, what the fuck is this? And I turn it off. And then, you know, later in the season, Greg's like, oh, there's a show called Lost. You need to watch it. So I could have been in from the ground floor, but I actually caught it on reruns for the first season. You know, that's how it happened to me.
Yeah.
Simply because I thought I was watching Lost, the reality show.
But I mean, think what you want to think of Lost. And some people really dislike it for the way it went. Some, you know, people still like it. I'm kind of, I mean, I think it was a great show. I'm kind of mixed on the last season. That pilot was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
That pilot was just spectacular. And I think it would grab anybody. It was just, I mean, absolutely crystal perfect storytelling, and building of suspense, and everything about it was just beautifully done. So you compare other things to that and it's like, okay. Like, I saw Last Resort, which is the sub one. I don't know if you know about Last Resort. The idea is there's this submarine, this American nuclear submarine, that gets orders to nuke Pakistan and doesn't do it because it came from kind of shadowy, weird way. And then they get attacked by U.S. By the U.S. And then they take over a U.N. place and say that they're now an independent nation with nukes.
The sub takes over? And...
Yes. Yeah. I did it really quick. But, you know, it's just, it wasn't...
How does a submarine have the attack force to take over?
It's a small island. Okay. It's a small Caribbean.
Like Malali or something?
Yeah, yeah. It's a tiny little island that happens to have a UN base on it.
Uh-huh.
And they take over that and they say, and we have, you know, 10 nukes and we're
got the tridents off the nuke.
And yeah, and we're declaring ourselves an independent nuclear nation and you better not mess with us. And it's weird because where do you go from there? What's the story? But just,
well, it could be an interesting story.
No, definitely. I mean, there's good characters and Andre Brower's in it. Amazing.
But how does the commander of a nuclear submarine get to that point? You know, it's...
Well, you have to watch it. I'm not going to give it away.
Okay.
But, so there's good stuff to the pilot. It's called Last Resort.
Okay.
There is on ABC. There's good stuff to the pilot, and there's some kind of things that weren't great. But I kept thinking I'm comparing this to Lost, and I shouldn't be because Lost was just fantastic in every way, and this is not. There are things that are bugging me about this. The actors aren't as good. There's things are a little more obvious.
Now, is there a pun at all? Like, there's a resort on the island.
You know, there's a semi kind of sort of pun in that the island might be considered a resort, but it's not really because it's kind of run by a drug kingpin.
Okay.
So I mean, it's not a resort island. So it's not
the love boat.
Yeah. No, it's not that sort of thing. And there's obviously there's going to be a lot of stuff between the people on the boat who've just taken over the island and the people who were previously in control of the island, you know, who ran it and that sort of situation. So
that sounds like a hard show to write for. Like,
yes. That. Yes. It's Sean Ryan, the same guy who did The Shield. So there's some backing to it.
Speaking of The Shield, Michael Chiklis has a new show.
He does?
Yeah.
He was in that superhero show last year, right? That
he was.
Or that was 2 years ago.
Heroes.
I think.
Right.
No, it wasn't Heroes. It was Ordinary Family or something like that.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. It was like The Incredibles, but live action.
Right.
He's more of a police procedural now, I think.
Another one. I guess go with what works, right? I mean, it's like, you know, you try to take...
Oh, no, it's Las Vegas. It's like,
Las Vegas, okay.
It's when they're establishing the gambling in Las Vegas. So he is the casino tycoon, mobster guy. You know, he's going to be fighting against the rancher guys that live there now. That's the show.
So I did see Elementary, too, which is the Sherlock Holmes one. And it's a different take on Sherlock Holmes than...
No Ordinary Family was the...
No Ordinary Family. It's a different take on Sherlock Holmes than the BBC series, which to me, at least, is superior. But there's other things about the BBC series. I mean, the BBC series was... They're all 90-minute episodes, and they're only three a year. So, I mean, they can do...
I mean, for people who don't know, that's something crazy to talk about. We're used to like 16 half 22. Hour or 22 hour long episodes. And Sherlock, which was a smash hit on the BBC, was were they 90 minute? I thought they were 2 hours.
90 minute, and there have been two seasons. So right. there are six, basically, you know. Movie longs before movies became 2.5 hours. Mm-hmm. Remember that? Remember that? Remember when there wasn't a Battleship movie that was 2.5 hours? I saw Battleship, by the way.
How was that?
It was fucking awful, but awful in a weirdly, ironically funny way. So that Damien and I saw it, and we were just making jokes through all of it. And it was hilarious. Like, Liam Neeson's in it, right? But it's obvious he was there for like 2 days. I mean, there's... it's an absolutely terrible, terrible movie, but it was not Transformers terrible.
Okay.
So Battleship wasn't like, eight different movies shoved together.
No farting robots.
Right. Planes. Exactly. It didn't drastically shift tone midway through, and you know, I mean, all this stuff. It had one tone consistently through, and it was overdone and ridiculous and stupid. And there were moments when you're laughing out loud at how absurd it is, but it was not Transformers. If that's a compliment today, that's a horrible, horrible thing. But it was not Transformers.
Oh, God.
Anyway, so yeah, so the Sherlock on BBC, they're an hour and a half long. They're, you know, so they have time to develop a story, and but there's only three of them, and they take their time in doing them. So it's
now think about Sherlock only being three episodes. Is that 1 week episode can really depress the season. Like for me, season one, episode three was a crapper compared to the first two, you know?
See, I felt differently. I felt this episode two and both seasons were not as good as the first of three. I mean, the first...
Maybe it was episode two. Yeah, I'm trying to think back. Because episode three would have had the cliffhanger with
Moriarty.
No, I think the rest of that episode, other than the cliffhanger scene, I can't recall, but I just recently watched the second season of Sherlock, and a little more tolerant to not every episode being up to pilot good, because, I mean, the pilot
was amazing. The pilot was just spectacular, and the first episode of the second season was really, really damn great, mm-hmm. too.
Yeah. You know, like, well, the middle episode of season two was the Hounds one, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was an interesting take, because it was based on...
They're all based on the original Sherlock Holmes stories, in the BBC Sherlock.
Okay. Yeah, but it was more of a hallucinogenic thing, right? So there was different...
Yeah, like, different like points for, well, of
view.
To example...
There
like,
was different points of view. So, like, how did they portray from which point of view they were telling the story, you know, and that. So that made it interesting.
No, I mean, it was definitely fun. It just wasn't like spectacular television, like, you know, the very first episode. Like,
which episode was up for all the Emmys?
I don't know. Oh, I do know the first one,
the pilot of the first season,
which was I'm trying to remember what the name of it was. A Scandal in Bulgaria. Was the name of the...
And that was the first of season
That one? Was the first of season two.
Oh, season two. Okay.
The first season one was A Study in Pink, which is based off of the Sherlock Holmes story, Study in Scarlet.
Okay.
So you see how, you know, they...
Scandal, I'm trying to think. The Bulgaria one. What was the basic plot of that one?
That was the woman, and she had the secret that the queen wanted to get, and... Oh.
So that was one where Sherlock's brother was played a big role, right?
Right, yes.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good show. I mean, I haven't watched Downton Abbey at all, so I don't know.
No, I haven't watched Downton Abbey too. I heard great things about the first season, then everyone says the second season turns into just basically a soap opera. So it turns to shit. Mm-hmm. So it's like, now I'm not really interested in watching it at all. Like apparently it was apparent in the first season, but it was, you know, new and different. Mm-hmm. And then the second season it just kept devolving.
So what do you think about the Emmys in general?
I think the Emmys are shit. And I think Jon Stewart was... Did you see Jon Stewart's acceptance speech?
I didn't.
So he was talking about, you know, because he got accepted. It was like a 10th year in a row of Daily Show won for Best Variety Show. And he's, you know, he talked about, first of all, how, you know, he thanks, you know, all his friends and writers, you know, and people in the show. He says, and we have this as a symbol, and one day when everything's dead and gone, and the aliens will come down and they'll see this and they'll know just how predictable these fucking things are. And that got bleeped, but it was still great. And it's true, because, I mean, like, if you ask me, what was the Colbert Report was better than The Daily Show this year. And for the last 2 years or so. It's just funnier and, you know, better and sharper. Even though The Daily Show is great, The Colbert Report was just, I mean, brilliant and mm-hmm. all the money. And what they did with the Super PAC and stuff like that was, when they made their own Super PAC, I mean, it was incredible social commentary at the same time, just brilliant.
Did you see
funny.
The Daily Show last week, the one where they had King Abdullah on?
Yeah, I don't watch the interviews as much. So
that was more the benchmark, right? But it was the Barack Obama's the luckiest dude in the world,
right? Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
Mitt Romney's the second luckiest dude. Oh, that was the funniest thing I've seen. Oh my god, that segment. Where they showed, you know, like Barack Obama should be polling horribly, but he's doing awesome because Mitt Romney is getting retarded closer to the election. And then, like, how did Mitt Romney get the election? And they ran, like, all his primary competitors. Like, oh, Mitt Romney's the second luckiest dude in the world. It was tremendous. That second segment of that show was the funniest thing.
Yeah. Oh, there are times when The Daily Show is just—I mean, it is just brilliant. And I've talked about before, you know, The Daily Show and their whole—they don't want people to get news from it. But I think that The Daily Show is not where you get your news from, but it's where you get informed about certain stories, and then you find out about the
How many people do the follow up? I think that's.
I think a lot. I think more than you might expect.
Okay.
I really do.
I mean, Heather is like. Anti-political, right? But she, you know, is watching The Daily Show, like the Barack Obama bit I showed you. And the next morning, I watched it at the gym one night, you know, like the day after it aired. In the morning, I'm like, here, you need to watch this. It's hilarious. And she watched it, and she watched it for the comedy aspect of it, but...
And so she gets a little bit informed, and she may, you don't know, but she may look online for other information about the stories. And that's the thing, is that at least you're planting the thing where... The story is out there. If you want to read more about it, it's there.
Yeah. Now, how do we continue without getting political? I don't want to get political, but mother.
Too late.
Yeah. Well, I'm not gonna. I'm gonna give you the option of continuing, but I'm like, I'm just gonna say, what the fuck?
Well, I will say this. I mean, it looks like Mitt Romney is not gonna win. Thank you.
Yeah.
I
wouldn't be opposed to a Republican candidate winning, but...
It depends on the Republican.
Yeah, well, I'm like, what the fuck?
And as the Republicans stand, the Republicans that are there now... I mean, when I was growing up, what Obama supports was essentially the Republican platform.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you wanted to draw a comparison or a separation between Reagan and Obama,
they're so close. I mean, the fact that they're calling Obama socialist. Nixon did the EPA. Nixon was part of people who thought about possibly producing a guaranteed income. This is so far from socialism. What Obama did with Obamacare was make corporations in charge of everything. That's as far as you can get from socialism. That's fascism. That's not socialism. Fascism is corporate and government working together.
I hear you. I mean, it's that whole segment we were just talking about, where like Mitt Romney's, you know, playing up the politics on, you know, how Barack Obama said he was for distribution, you know, but then 4 days earlier he's talking about how people should have different benefits for. Mm-hmm. Was it Social Security or was it for Medicare?
It was Social Security, I think, yeah.
Yeah, where like the well-to-do should have less benefits than the needy.
It's playing to a tiny point of portion of the base.
I mean, I'm trying to like... How can... I understand the whole, you have a chip in your brain, you know, that makes you lean one way or the other, right?
Right.
And you're going to seek out the evidence that enforces your opinion.
Yes.
I understand that. It's hard for me to understand how even the Republican base can't see Romney as a guy who will say whatever his handlers tell him to say.
Well, the thing is that that's starting to happen. He's losing the Catholic vote, which is, you know, an example of that. I mean, he's got the evangelical vote tied up, but that's 20-25%. He's losing the Catholic vote to Obama because they're starting to see this is not.
I mean, you know, remember when Kerry was labeled a flip flopper,
right?
That was just because of one bad soundbite, you know, on par with Barack Obama's. They didn't build that. You know, it was the same kind of bad soundbite, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I voted for it before I voted against it, you know.
Right.
Just a horrible soundbite. But if anyone has any kind of memory, they can hear Romney saying contradicting things depending on his audience.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the fact that what they call Obamacare is essentially what they called Romneycare before that. There's very little difference between the two plans, and now Romney is saying that Obamacare is socialism and horrible. What?
We got emergency rooms.
Yeah, we have emergency. That's right. That's his solution. Oh, you just got an emergency room.
Because that'll keep healthcare costs.
Yeah,
down.
Exactly. You know, that's not going to be a problem for you at all, right? I mean, this is a guy who has a, I think he has a mean calculation of like $250 million. He's not a super billionaire, but he can certainly afford to go to the emergency for anything he needs.
But he
absolutely has his own doctor and his own insurance and whatever. But the idea of, I mean, that's the most inefficient, horrible way to give care to people. And then it saddles people with debt for the rest of their lives. Or you lose the money. That's it. That's the only option. Either the emergency room does not get any of their money back.
Or the government pays for it anyway.
Well, that's the thing. Either the hospital is saddled with that money. Or you know, simply because they can't garnish wages if a person doesn't make any money, or they garnish the person's wages for the rest of their lives. That's the only options that are there if you do emergency room only care. And so it, you know, either destroys people's lives, or the hotel or the hospitals make nothing. How is that good? How is that in any way good?
But a government mandate's worse. mandate
to for people to get private insurance, private companies, for-profit companies.
I mean,
is socialism.
So if you're not going to have universal health care,
I mean, I'm a single. I've turned into a single payer solution.
So I mean, here's the thing. I mean, no one has the balls to say it. If you're against universal health care, then you need to be for hospitals turning away emergency care. You need to give them the option to say, "Fuck you."
Yeah.
No,
you also healthcare. Should be against fire companies coming to do your house if you don't pay fire insurance. The police coming to help you, getting roads. I mean, that's what you have to be against. You're against. You're against absolute public services on every single level.
Right, but if you're against universal health care, then you should be for the hospital swiping your credit card before they give you any kind of health care.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, you can't get
care. Romney wants people to get free health care up front.
Well, it's not free. That's the problem.
Well, it's free up front. Your life is saved. And then one of the two scenarios... You'd like to save
temporarily. You can't get continuing care.
One of the two scenarios you mentioned happens, but that's beyond the rhetoric.
Right, yeah.
Doesn't get covered.
Doesn't get covered in the soundbite. Well, that's why Romney's losing. Because people are either committed one way or the other, or they're seeing through it, and they're seeing the nonsense.
He just seems like a stuffed animal.
He seems like a boilerplate that then people.
I mean, even the leaked video of the 47%, he doesn't seem like an evil guy hiding his evil side. He just seems like he's saying whatever his handlers tell him to say.
Well, he seems completely out of touch in that video, and completely unfeeling, and completely inconsiderate. The 47% line was terrible. It wasn't just the 47%. It was that, to me, the most devastating line of that was when he said, "I can't convince them to take responsibility for themselves."
They're going to vote for...
It wasn't just that they're going to vote for him. It was that I can't convince them to take responsibility for their lives. So it was the idea that these people are just moochers. That's it. And these, there are 47% of the population, 47% who are just moochers. And that's including like veterans and people on Medicare. It's, and people paying the alternative minimum taxes and people paying income tax and paying sales tax and all this stuff. They're just not paying the pure income tax.
By the way, if you are screaming at the radio because you don't like what we're saying, but you're sticking on because you want to hear what we say next, there's not going to be any non-political next. So just turn it off
this
now.
This is the end.
Yeah, so if you disagree with us and our politics and you're waiting for the next good science-y bit, no more science-y bit tonight. We're just going to rant and
let's talk about the Mars rover. Actually, there was
they found sedimentary rock.
Yes, they did. That was actually cool. So you're wrong. They found very almost certain evidence that there was water flow because the pebbles were too large for you to take them by wind. They were eroded. So they were basically rounded. It was a stream.
And it was cemented into a... They didn't call it sedimentary. I don't know if it's technically sedimentary, but basically it...
Well, there were some that were sedimented, and there were some that were. They were like pebbles that were on the ground, too. So
right. There was polished igneous or metamorphic, but it was established in the sediment. So imagine if you look at some sandstone and you see the crystals, right? The crystals came from somewhere, and then the sandstone kind of just pushed it all together into a solid mass. You know, that's kind of the thing. So they're seeing eroded, rounded, polished rocks from living in a stream bed, like, you know, river rock is. And then it was cemented into a sedimentary rock.
I mean, frankly, it's not all that surprising. We know there's been water there in the past. And well, I mean, we know that the Mars that water exists. Well, I mean,
they saw these rivulets, these deltas, these erosion patterns.
What they call the aerovial fans.
Aerovial fans. These erosion patterns, but you know, it wasn't proven to be from liquid.
Right.
There was theories that, you know,
I mean, it could have been from magma as opposed to from.
Well, there's that. There's like, it could have been wind.
Right.
You know, I mean, people doing due diligence saying it sure looks like water because everything on Earth that looks like this is from water.
Yeah.
But could wind do this? Yes, wind could do that. You know, that's what they were saying up until now. And now they're saying, it's water, bitches. Lots of water.
So that just shows that there was water there. And assuming that
water... Lots of water. Vigorous water.
Yeah. So you make the assumption that water is necessary for life. You make the assumption that carboniferous compounds are necessary for life. Both of those are common on Mars.
It's only a matter of time till we find microbial life.
Or the remnants of it.
Well, that's what I mean. The fossils.
Yeah.
Microbial life.
Yeah, I think it's almost certainly true that there was life on Mars. I would put it at 98%.
It would be a discovery, like you said, almost certainly true. It would be an astounding discovery to say we have exhausted our search on Mars. We've searched under every nook and cranny,
right?
And there's no life.
Yeah,
that would be stunning to me.
I would not be surprised if there was still life on Mars, like underground, because I
that would be an equally big discovery, finding living life on Mars.
I'm a believer in panspermia to a point. I think that life is probably seeded on Earth and Mars by asteroids, because I think we find complex organic compounds in asteroids and stuff like that. It only makes sense that.
Do you think it started one place or the other, or both the organics came from?
I would not be surprised if we found life on Mars, we found life on Earth, and we compared it, and they were very similar, and they shared a similar genetic destiny.
Now, if you look at like the early solar system, was Mars habitable before Earth? Are we all Martians that have been transplanted?
That's an interesting question. I don't know if you could ever answer that. I think it's more likely we were all asteroidal.
That's just organic compounds.
And we split up. Well, I mean, what you would do is you would try to compare, is the Mars, is it just RNA based? Is it DNA? Is it something different? If it's DNA, does the DNA have shared sequences with stuff
on Earth? What I'm just supposing, right, is that Mars would have been in the habitable zone earlier than Earth. Earth would have been too hot and all kinds of magma and shit, where Mars might have been.
I don't know
been.
Whether that's necessarily the case. I think they're roughly habitable about the same time. It's okay. Just Mars lost its habitability a lot quicker. Did not have a magnetic field to protect its atmosphere, did not have the gravity to protect its atmosphere, and dried out completely.
You suck, Mars. Why did you keep on
And Venus was a little too close, had too much carbon dioxide, turned into a greenhouse. And probably all evidence of life is destroyed. And so we have Earth. And we probably have fossils on Mars. And there may be life
fossils
on other...
Fossils on Venus? You think they're destroyed?
For example, in order to land on Mars, you remember how complicated that was? In order to land on Venus, all you gotta do is get through the atmosphere a little bit, and then you just sort of float down to the bottom. It's like an ocean.
Well, sure. It's like really...
Yeah.
The surface of Venus, the pressure is like being like, what, like 700 meters something under the ocean? And like, that would crush you. You know, so it's insanely thick atmosphere. Like, you can't even comprehend how thick the atmosphere is.
Right.
You can almost swim in it.
You can literally swim it. I mean, that's how thick it is.
You'd be able to flap your arms and get off the ground.
I believe so, yeah. It's essentially a liquid. And so you can just sort of let something go and just sort of let it float down to the bottom. Venus is, and that kind of crushing pressure would destroy
fossils. You don't think there's any fossil evidence?
I think that kind of crushing pressure would destroy fossilization, or destroy evidence of fossilization, or most of it. I mean, remember, fossilization is rare on Earth anyway. I mean, it happens to occur in certain places, but it's pretty rare.
I see.
Over the course of 3.5 billion years we've had life on there, we have built up a lot, but it's still a rare event. It's not something that occurs often.
I gotta pee.
I think it's a good time to end it. So we were wrong. We went to science.
We did. Fuck you, Romney.
Yeah, bitch.